kultuur, jou stasie, Radio Groot Rivier.
Radiostasie van die Suidkant.
Welkom en goeienaand by Radio Groot Rivier, radiostasie van die Suidlanders en jou stem hier uit die Noord-Kaap uit. Dis reg, ons saai regstreeks vanaf Appington uit, nie te ver van die magtige Oranje Rivier af nie, wat seker so 'n kilometer van ons ateljee afloop. En wat 'n lekker aand is dit weer eens nie, dis donderdag aand om 6:00 en dit beteken dit is tyd vir ons lekker geselsprogram, die Suidlanders gesels. En ons het nou al voorheen gepraat met baie van die hoofde en die leiers van Suidlanders om 'n bietjie meer perspektief te kry oor wat regtig waar agter die skerms gebeur by hierdie organisasie. Maar vir die afgelope, ek sal seker sê nou al 2 maande lank, gesels ek met Simon Roche. Hy is die nasionale departementshoof van buitelands en hy is natuurlik 'n groot bron van kennis met wat alles in die buiteland aan die gang is, van die politieke landskappe wat daar is, vanaand gaan ek en hy 'n bietjie praat oor die goud en die dollar. Kom ons kyk of ons vir Simon op die lyn kan kry. Goeienaand Simon, hoe gaan dit?
Goeienaand Marius, dit gaan goed, hoor jy my goed of is daar baie weergalm?
Nee, ek hoor jou goed op hierdie stadium.
Okay. Nee, alles is reg hierso, dankie. Ek het nou net gebraai en ek het 4 lekker groot skaapchops geëet en what more could you ask for?
Ja, nee, wragtig, dit is daarom maar net in ons kultuur en deel van ons menswees is om lekker te braai en dit is, jy maak my eintlik so my honger, lus vir lekker braai vleis.
Weet jy, Marius, I once got sent something, you know, as I receive a lot of information and go through a lot of information every day about Jesus and braaiing. And I thought, no man, this is really, you don't talk about God as if he's your next door neighbor. I thought it would be half godslasterend. I read the first few lines of what this person had to say, and I can't remember the details. But he ended up demonstrating that on whatever number of occasions, let's say 12 occasions in the New Testament, Jesus had to have been braaiing. He had to have been at a braai. You know, he demonstrated through like the miracles on the Sea of Galilee and the loaves and the fishes. How were they going to cook that stuff there while he was, you know, doing a sermon? It had to have been a braai. So I always feel as if braaiing is, I don't know, as if it's the way that food should be cooked. You know, that's just my brain. That thing convinced me so much, that little thing that I got sent.
Ja,
it's the right proper way to eat.
Ja, ek bedoel die brandoffers wat hulle tog tot ere van ons Hemelse Vader gebring het daardie tyd, het hulle gesê daai geure, daai reuk van die vet en die vleis wat braai is geurig in God se neusgate. Dit staan so geskryf in die Bybel. So ek bedoel ons kan nie te ver fout gaan met braai nie. Maar dit was natuurlik ter ere van hom daardie brandoffers gedoen, maar nog steeds. Dit is 'n ander man of jou eie braai, dit ruik maar net lekker.
Ja, maybe that's why South Africans, for all Afrikaners, braai so much. Maybe, I don't know.
Ja, maar Simon, ek het so vinnig nou net voordat ek laat ons met mekaar begin gesels het op die lig, het ek vir die luisteraars gesê, ons gaan vanaand 'n bietjie induik in die goud en die dollar in, wat aangaan met die goud en die dollar.
Ja, Marius, you may recall that in 2018 we produced a video, quite a big long video, in which I just more or less read off statistics to make the point that the world economic system and the financial system and the financial welfare of people in rich countries and so on and so forth, everything on that theme, lots and lots and lots of statistics, indicate that the world was teetering on the brink of the greatest financial catastrophe in history. And we made the point that it may not happen this year or next year, that's to say 2018 or 2019, because the more that you dig, the more that you scratch, the more you come to appreciate that it's controlled, that it's not, market forces are not spontaneous and random. And so we said in that video that we don't know for how long the elites are going to keep global finance balanced on the precipice of a great cliff. But all of this stuff is present, all of these factors. And we've seen in recent weeks, recent years too, there were enormous things that took place in 2000 and let's say 19, 20 and 21. Behind the scenes of the COVID, there were massive moves pulled by the global elites to line their pockets. And I'm not talking, you know, small change out of vaccinations, a few billion. I'm talking trillions and trillions and trillions to shift wealth and to move it and to take it for themselves. I'll give you a for instance. When Donald Trump printed that $8 trillion, I've told you before that from 1776 to 2016, it's about 240 years. And in that 240 years, the debt, gross debt of the USA plus interest was $20 trillion. Donald Trump then added $8 trillion in just 4 years. So he printed more money than anybody else, any two presidents put together, any two terms, any single two-term president. And that was without the interest, because I'm taking a loan, the interest isn't being added to it immediately. You know, it builds over time. And some of the interest that's being paid now from the US debt is interest that was incurred, but is only now being realized 40 years ago. And that is interest on top of interest. It's compound interest. So it's when we say that Donald Trump added $8 trillion or 40% of the US debt in a record time, we're actually being gentle on him, because it's a false comparison. You're comparing just the capital to, in some cases, compound interest from maybe 70 or 80 years ago, you know, huge debts incurred from World War I or World War II. And it is the case that some of them haven't been paid off yet. Germany paid off its World War I debt about, what are we in, 2024? It might have been 2014, 100 years later, 100 years after the war began. So we saw all of these funny things happen. Oh, sorry, I was going to give you an example. When Donald Trump was printing that money, it was being given by the US government to primarily three institutions: State Street, BlackRock, and Vanguard. All of them majority owned, as a matter of interest, by Israeli passport holders. And those guys were getting it at 0.1% interest from the US government. And during that period, famously in the USA, credit card interest rates soared to up to 30%. So I'm getting for 0.1%, getting the money from the government to put it to the economy. I'm a financial institution, so what I'm looking at first is lending. And I lend it to you at 300 times the amount that I pay for it. 300 times is 30,000%. I charge you 30,000% more to borrow money from me than I'm being charged by the US government. So there were all of these shenanigans going on. We could see big things coming. And those chickens have come home to roost. In the past few weeks, we've seen Warren Buffett, for instance, dump 50% of his Apple shares. I think they were worth $70 or $72 or $77 billion. We've seen Mark Zuckerberg sell shares, Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, the family that owns Walmart, it's Walton, W-A-L-T-O-N, the Walton family is selling off, I think it was 19 million of their shares in just a few days. We know that U.S. banks are under great stress. We know that they are in big trouble. I happen to be very, very, very intimate friends with a millionaire in the USA whose father is the financial director for a group of banks, six different chains, six different brands under one umbrella. So I don't know, maybe it's 100 outlets or 200, I couldn't tell you. And he has been telling me that there is almost a hysteria among the authorities over banks' financial circumstances. Now, his father's banks are trading A-OK, profitably, everything's good. But being in the industry, they're getting these calls from the regulators and regulators coming to visit and checking and double checking and rechecking and triple checking and so on. Because many banks in the USA are basically zombies. Over the past few years, the chorus of voices such as Saitlander's in big speeches, in the WhatsApp groups that I run, you know, the people from the European Parliament on one group, the German Parliament, Croatian Parliament, very high up people in the USA. The voices such as mine, but I'm just an example. I'm not in the vanguard. I'm not the main guy. But the number of voices that is willing to call this thing out has gone up over the past 3 years from, man, I doubt that there were 100 of us making noise on YouTube, big noise, and in speeches and public things, you know. I might have been the smallest of all 100, but certainly Saitlander's has been on this case now for a number of years. And it's now probably 10,000 or 100,000 people making their voices heard, people who are either experts in the subject or who have done a lot of research like me. I'm no expert. I'm not a financier. I'm not an economist, but I put in a lot of effort. I familiarized myself with the subject, and so I felt safe talking about it. And so the number of experts or just well-read people who are making a song and dance on Telegram, Twitter, and YouTube has gone from, as I say, maybe 100 to maybe 10,000. As people have begun to recognize that there are some things that are very, 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 very wrong. And to answer your question, now that I've been talking for 10 minutes solid, and to come to the point, what is happening with the dollar and gold is two things. Call it roughly 50-50. The dollar is losing value at a frightening rate, and there is enormous demand for gold. So what you're seeing is the combined effects of people, of gold, of the dollar not being able to buy as much, so there you pay more. So I used to pay $1 for a packet of chips in the shop in the USA. the dollar has collapsed against the pound and the yen and the Deutschmark and the what have you. It has lost value. I'm now paying $1.50. So there's that effect, the lessening of the value of the dollar. And the other effect, or the other cause, I should say, is the desire of institutions. So let's talk about banks, finance houses, billionaires. They're practically institutions, even though they're individuals, are saying, I don't like the look of the future. Never mind that the value of the dollar is collapsing. For other reasons, I am going to buy gold. Now, you may be interested to know, Marius. Sorry, I've answered your question, but I'll just end with this little epilogue. You may be interested to know that if you compare the performance of gold and silver to the stock and the bond markets over any period of time, they do better. I don't mean a half an hour or a day or a week or a month. I'm saying if you compare over years. Now, some people will say, no, but I put money into the stock market and I got a 450% return. You can never get that from gold. Yeah, because you put it into one of the six stocks on the S&P 500 that is profitable. Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, Google, Netflix, and I forget the sixth one. Most stocks in the USA, so in other words, 494 of the 500 stocks on the S&P 500, 494 of them. In the average year, obviously you have some blips, some anomalies, but on average cannot give you the return that gold and silver do. So there's this fallacy that gold and silver are poor performers and they don't have the value that they used to have. That's true. But the great secret of this story is that if you go do good research, watch on YouTube Dr. Chris Martinson or Mike Maloney do one of their courses on YouTube, 12-part series, you will rapidly discover that, in fact, it is always best to be in gold and silver. Unless you are very, very, very lucky and you happen to be the guy who invested in Bitcoin when it was worth 1 cent or whatever. The rest of us, gold and silver is always the winner. And so that's what we're seeing now. It's huge. People are really screaming from the rooftops. I'm a little bit behind in my work, but there's some videos I have to watch by some of the top commentators in the world where I don't know whether they're looking, they're offering clickbait with the titles of their videos, or it is as bad as the titles of the videos that I've read but whose videos I haven't been able to watch. It seems to be very bad. And now today we've got gold at $2,570. When for a long time, it couldn't get through 2,000. It couldn't get through 1,800. Yeah. Then 1,900. Then 2,000. Now $2,570. It's unbelievable, Marius.
Yeah, for an ounce.
Yes, for a troy ounce. So a normal ounce is about 28.5 grams, just to keep it simple. 28.5 grams is an ounce. But a troy ounce is 33 grams. It's just worth mentioning that to people because there is a little bit of a difference there, 5 grams difference in weight.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Dan Simon, ja, dit is, ons weet die skrif is aan die muur vir die dollar. Goud was nou al voorheen 'n standaard gewees, die gold standard was nou al 'n standaard gewees, maar wat hoe ek nie dinge by mekaar kan sit nie, is ons weet die New World Order wil graag digital gaan, dat jy nie meer gaan met geld, kan mee koop en verkoop nie, en wat ook al nie, maar toch is BRICS ook besig om hulle eie geld eenheid te begin by mekaar kry, en ek is nie seker nie, miskien kan jy my reg help, maar dit voel al vir my of die olie reg oor die wêreld met miskien daai BRICS eenheid gaan mee gekoop of nie gekoop word nie. So dis half so asof twee forces met wat gaan vorentoe gebeur met die geld eenhede. Is dit nou die digital of is dit nou die BRICS geld eenheid of wat ook al gaan gebeur? Maar dis die standaard is maar nog altyd deur die geskiedenis laat goud, jy gaan met goud kan koop. Goud gaan waardevol wees.
Ja, Marius, there's a guy called George Gammon, G-A-M-M-O-N, who recently, he's a very wealthy investor from the USA, and he has a video channel in which he describes certain economic and financial concepts to ordinary people. Some people, he's not my favorite, but many people adore him for his school teacher-like way of explaining things very simply. And he recently took a trip through South America. He's American. Through South America to assess for himself what happens to money when there's a crisis, when there's a civil war. So he went to a whole bunch of countries, some of which are at war, some have been at war, some have got sanctions on them. and the financial crises there. And he produced a video about it. It's really worth watching. And I'll try to quote him as accurately as possible. But if people want to know more, they should go and watch his video for themselves, because I didn't memorize every word for this program. And it's months back that I watched it. He said, what happens is that you can't use Bitcoin and gold and silver for day-to-day trade. People stick to the money. So the money loses value, but they stick to the note. He said, however, what does happen is that if you go into gold and silver, at the end of the day, people recognize the value of it. So they're falling over themselves. They don't want to get a piece of silver for a night's accommodation or for 10 gallons of gas. They want you to pay them in Zimbabwe dollars, as it were, the Venezuelan equivalent, the Chilean equivalent, the Peruvian equivalent. But they will buy gold and silver from you and a separate deal, because it just does work. And that's a little bit different to our circumstances, because we're not going to readily be able to, certainly in the early days, be able to, you know, print our own money. So if we don't have a supply coming in, and there's naturally a diminishing of the supply internally, because some people will hoard. Some people will have things that everybody else wants to buy. So you might go into a crisis and you're not very rich, but you're very clever, and you bought in advance 100 pencils, 1,000 pins, 1,000 needles, and whatever else that people are, because we're not going to be able to import rayon, the nylon and polypropylene, I don't know, all these fabrics from China. So repairing of clothes is going to become vital. And there are another million things. You know, somebody with chickens who's got eggs, people are going to be pleading and giving every last cent. The person who gets the money keeps the money, presumably for the most part. You don't want to throw your money away. So the money supply within our circumstances will diminish. What is recognized as money. And it'll be some time before we can erect printing presses that produce money of good enough quality that people will accept it. So our circumstance is different because we're alienated. We are going to rely far more heavily on barter and on silver than the normal person. For big deals, people will take gold, but the price of gold will be around about $30,000. The price discovery of gold should be about $30,000, a troy ounce. So if you've got two, you know, there's a guy who's come into this crisis of Saitlanders, of Umsina's prophecy, with 1,000 head of cattle, for instance, and somebody else has big money, and they want to buy a lot of cattle, they want to trade, they want to sell to other people, they want to own open a chain of butcheries within the Saitlander safe zone. These are all hypothetical scenarios. They're fairy tales, but they make the point. He might, if he's got a lot of gold, say to this farmer who's come into our national emergency plan safe area, hey, what about 10 pieces of gold for 100 head of cattle or whatever? So there will be that. George Gammon ended, there will be that for us, because our circumstances will be different. But George Gammon ended the video, having now made the case that people will stick to paper money. It's only the clever guys who recognize that they should have gold and silver. Yeah. He said, yesterday, I bought another $1 million of gold and silver. He said, the point that I learned was tweedelig. It was two points in one. It's not that I've been wrong all along to be preaching the virtues of gold and silver. It's I'm absolutely dead right. I know better than ever. However, I'm now also going to take $1 million of cash out of my bank account and stick it under my bed and lose 25% of the value every year to the true inflation of the USA, because I don't know when the crisis is going to hit. So you have to cover both bases. And I thought that was one of the most interesting things I've ever learned when it comes to economics and finance.
Yeah. And then, het jy enige informatie oor die BRICS, die BRICS geld eenheid? Ek het net nou die dag gehoor, het iemand vir my vertel, dat dit klink my die BRICS geld eenheid begin al hoe nader te kruip, dat hulle eie geld eenheid wil stig en dan begin try daarmee.
Ja, they've been very cagey about it. Excuse me, I'm just going to take a big sip of this glass of water, I beg your pardon. Let me mute my microphone in the interest of good manners. Yeah. For a long time, they were very cagey about it. And one almost got the impression that it might be a bulldust story, because there would be rumors and then no action. Rumors, nothing comes out. Rumors and no progress in the rumors, kind of the same rumors. About 2 weeks ago, for the first time, two officials, I think the one was a senior Indian finance ministry official and the other was a senior Chinese guy, if I'm not mistaken, said in official circumstances, you know, they said to the camera or to the microphone or to the reporter taking notes, yes, we are progressing and it is very nearby. I can't say any more than that. Thank you. So, and that was, if I'm not mistaken, on the same day. So it looks like it's coming. And if it comes, Maurice, it is going to turn the world upside down. We are going to be smacked so hard, it's just not true. You know, South African banks don't print their own money and they didn't capitalize themselves. So South African banks are ultimately indebted to banks in the USA and Europe. So if the currencies of the USA and Europe are capsized, we will feel the downstream ripple effects. My car loan is going to go from whatever, 5,000 Rand a month to 24,000 Rand a month, because I must pay the same price that the rest of the global financial system is paying. Nedbank, for example, I forget the real full name, but it's the Nederlandse Bank van Zuid-Afrika or something, and it was shortened to Nedbank. It was capitalized out of Holland. Those debts ripple backwards. The level of independence that the big corporations pretend to us is not nearly what they would have you believe. For instance, MTN might say, we've got 1 million shares on the market and they're owned by 100,000 people. Those are our owners. It ends right there. And everybody believes it. What they don't tell you is, we are not only obligated to our owners, we are also obligated when the rubber hits the road, when the buck absolutely stops, to our creditors. And our chief creditors are the people who capitalized us. It's one of those little known things. So I think that we're in for a big hiding, Marius, an enormous club. South Africa is caught in the middle because the country was built on Western capitalism, whereas now it is in bed with BRICS. So who knows what's going to happen here, but I fear that it is going to be especially traumatic. Maybe, you know, you can say, well, I'm glad that my voorouers was... My voorsate was hier genote en hulle het hier naartoe gekom, want oom Sine van Rensburg het mos gesê van die wapens wat gebruik word, wat hy nie eers kan beskryf nie, hulle is so erg, daarboe in die noorde. So ek is bly, ek is hierso. Ja, many of us think like that, but I think we've got a special type of hell waiting for us, and I don't think that it's just a black-white thing, or a Doringbos Suidlanders thing. I think our lives are about to become very much more complicated in ways that we never expected.
Ja. Nee, dit is die waarheid, dit is definitief so. Nou Simon, ek en jy het nou in die week het ons bietjie gepraat oor 'n toekomstige program wat ek en jy wil aanbied, wat gaan oor voorbereiding en ek wil net ook vir die luisteraars sê, dit gaan 10-10-1, as dit met jou reg is, Simon, so middel volgende maand gaan ons daarmee kan afskop, so 12 of 14 episodes van wat gaan oor voorbereiding, alles rondom voorbereiding, en ek sien nogal uit daarna.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too, because as I think I might have mentioned to you previously, when I began doing this work clandestinely for Suidlanders, you know, I was very big in the live event industry, and if you're big in any industry, if you're one of the top road builders in South Africa, you're not building roads for a guy who lives in a suburb, you're building for a municipality or province or a government. So I have very strong ties to the government, to the ANC, etc., etc. So I began, you know, volunteering to do things, but on a dekmantel. And at that time, I had taken my big decision to leave that industry, and it was costing me a lot. And so I didn't have money to spend on preparations. So I became a student of it. I said, well, I've got no money. I've just resigned from the most lucrative job in the entire industry. Oor my gewete, my conscience just wouldn't let me do it anymore. Now I'm really screwed, good and proper. So I became a student of it. And I look forward to sharing knowledge that most people don't have. Most people preparing practically are doing better than me if they freeze drying veggies and they've got a nice caravan and they've got two buckies and they whatever else. Yes, of course. But those people I find every day of my life have got very little idea of how much greater prepping can be. Nobody thinks of a weaver's loom. But one Tani is going to come into this crisis with a weaver's loom, and she and her children and her children's children will never have to work for bread again in their lives. Because if you're the only person who can weave clothing, a weaver's loom, by the way, is a hang of a thing to make. It's not what you might think. I've seen one up close. It's very complicated. Doesn't look like it until you look closely. She, for months and months and months, is going to be the most in-demand person in our national emergency plan. And that's the kind of stuff I want to talk about, things that people might not have thought of. Weaver's looms. The top guru in prepping in the world is a guy called Zeko. He was trapped for a year in a Croatian enclave, a city that was dominated by Croats in Bosnia-Herzegovina, during the Yugoslav breakup, the Yugoslav Civil War. The Civil War ended and he went to America and he kind of announced himself, as it were, as I know more about prepping than anybody else on earth. try me. You just try me. And he started coming out with the stuff that nobody had thought of. But he'd spent a year with no electricity, no running water at all, no clean water of any description, no zero clean water. The forces outside the city closed the taps and shut down the electricity. So there was no running water, and whatever water there was on the floor from the rain. It was filthy. And he started coming up with things that he learned there that are mind-blowing, absolutely mind-blowing. When I tell you the top five things that he recommends, I think every single listener will be amazed. It's just, there's so much more to it. There's so much more potential for us to prepare well, even if we don't have a lot of money. So I'm looking forward to it as much as you are, Maurice.
Ja, dis natuurlik belangrik. Ek dink daar's baie preppers wat nie regtig waar 'n ekstra geldjie in die maand het om nou 5 sakke ekstra kredeniersware te gekoop net vir prepping nie. En soos jy sê, dit gaan baie ouens se oë oopmaak teenoor jy hoef nie altyd baie geld te hê om slim te dink rondom prepping nie. Maar nou ja, dankie Simon, weer eens lekker gewees om met jou te gesels bietjie oor die goud en die dollar gesels. Ons het so 'n klein bietjie het ek fabrieks ingebring. So interessante tye wat voor lê met die goud en die dollar. En die ekonomie en al die rande dinge wat aan die gang is rondom dit, ons sal maar ons vinger op het hou, wel, jy gaan meer jou vinger op hou en ek sal jou vraag daaroor. maar ja, weer eens, baie dankie Simon, en dan gesels ons donderdag aan weer met mekaar.
Yes, de volgende donderdag aan, and thank you very much for the privilege of this, Marius, I thoroughly enjoy it, and I feel as if it is a privilege for me. Thank you very much.
Groot plesier, Simon, tot ziens.